Welcome back to Behind the Play. I am joined today by One Soccer, Northern of end of the Northern Football Podcast, Alex Gange-Ruzic, a man of many hats. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming on. And you know, it's funny, I texted you right before the you came on today, thinking, wow, there's a lot of news to talk about. So, how are things in your world after a Copa America and obviously now the Olympics upon us and tomorrow for the women? How crazy is your life right now, and how much sleep are you getting?
Surprisingly, the sleep part's good. Thanks for having me on, Alex. I've come in here refreshed. I had a good night's last night. I needed it. Yeah, just depends on the day. I think it's about to start to get hectic because we got some early kickoffs. Trying to keep an eye on the other games too. That's where it starts to get complicated. Definitely Copa America stretched to the limit of just like, wow, it's so much going on. Canada's doing this, they're playing these games. It was everything. It was a bit of a hectic time, but I honestly I love it. This kind of stuff you just love to dive into is these sorts of tournaments. I'm sure you know well, having gotten a taste of those sorts of tournaments. And I've been following, of course, your basketball coverage, and hopefully we can see the basketball guys ball out. And similar for soccer now at the Olympics. It'll be good to see Canada do well in these sorts of team sports. But yeah, no, definitely been hectic in terms of just people texting, people calling. What's your read on this? What's your read on this? I try my best to keep up with all of it because yeah, so much fascinating news going on, and not never a dull day, it really feels like with this sport. It always feels like you got something new from some player happened to this, that. Now you got drones in the mix. My goodness.
You led right into it. Obviously, I think it was kind of early last night, and today there's the drone story with the women's team, and a couple coaches got sent home. Bev Priestman isn't going to be on the sidelines against New Zealand. And just what were your initial thoughts when you woke up and you saw the report and that Canada had been, I guess, a mini spy gate on New Zealand yesterday?
Yeah, I'd say a few things. I think first, jokingly, I saw that and I go, wow, well, Canada's bringing the CONCACAF to the Olympics, because for those who've followed sport in the region, drone use is not anything that's not been done by teams. Canada themselves have even been not caught, but almost admissions of guilt. John Herdman, 2021, ahead of a game versus Honduras, they caught a drone, or they didn't catch it, but they saw a drone outside Honduras training. John Herdman was asked about it, and he kind of joked, saying something along the lines of like, a lot of people fly drones, so who knows what happened there. It's kind of a weird admission of, yeah, we did that, like, so what? Obviously, in CONCACAF, sometimes the line between fair play and hard to say cheating, because I mean, I guess in a sense, a lot of it is like if you're talking about trying to win red cards, trying to dive for penalties, willingness to get physical, willingness to spy on other teams, psychological battles, right? Like you see a lot of war of words between managers. Ultimately, it's not quite cheating, but there's definitely, it's in that gray area. And I think definitely drones is one of those where it's further in that gray area, and it is definitely more of the cheating side. And that's for Canada. Just to do that at the Olympics is a huge surprise, because the Olympics is just, this is a very different competition. This is where, fair play comes in. This is something where the spirit of the Olympics is a thing. Cheating at an event like this, especially, it calls into huge questions of what Canada were thinking, what Canada's plan was. The big surprise about all this really was that they got caught cheating against New Zealand, probably their easiest match on paper. Understandably, they've obviously brought in a new coach, New Zealand has, so there's an element of surprise there that they're not going to be able to have the advantage of knowing the coach that was there last World Cup. Now it's a new one, Michael Mayne, who was pretty much hired like very recently, so perhaps that's where Canada really want to get that extra advantage of their tactics. But yeah, I just think the way I kind of sum up and saw the incident was, they kind of brought a little CONCACAF to the Olympics. And on one hand, you kind of laugh because for so long, Canada has been accused of being too nice in CONCACAF, of not playing up to those sorts of extra edges that teams will go to get a win. And sometimes that's hurt them. But then on the other side, you're kind of like, well, you got to bring that CONCACAF attitude within CONCACAF. When you're at other tournaments, there's a certain way you need to handle yourselves to hold yourselves. And I think Canada obviously chose the wrong time to bring a bit of that CONCACAF edge. And certainly now it creates some unfortunate, it just it's it, it's now it's leads to problems on all levels, right? Because now you got unnecessary pressure on the team. Now you kind of got this label of all these guys are cheaters. Like, it's just now it's going to create all this unnecessary attention. Bev Priestman removed herself from a game. Two coaches have been sent home. Like, now this is just a scandal that Canada didn't need to have, quite frankly.
Always Canada soccer and scandal should be like the first search on your Google tab. You put in Canada soccer and then it'll just say scandal. I feel like that there's always something with the organization. But maybe just on that note and all the intrigue, the drama that now arrives and comes from this scandal, how do you think this team's going to manage it heading into the Olympics? Like, they're a bit younger than maybe previous iterations of this team, but how big, like, how can they manage this while also still hopefully getting a decent result?
I think they can handle this well, the team itself. I think what the good news is, even though Bev Priestman will be missing for the first game, they'll be missing some key members of their staff. Canada's really stamped out an identity over the last 10 months in terms of a formation, in terms of their setup, in terms of where players fit. Also, this team is young but experienced. Something that really stood out by surprise is like they've only got like across the 22, they've only got one player over 31. That's Desiree Scott, who was called in last minute. Before she was called in, they had no players over 31, and they only had four players above the age of 30. Now it's five, of course, with Scott. And they have, like a half dozen players 25 or under, despite those numbers, which skew younger among the teams that I was looking at in Canada's group. They've got seven players with 100 caps or more. And some of them are players like Jessie Fleming, who's still just 26 and is the team's captain, yet she's still young. And I think that's something that's interesting with Canada, is that this team, very much on paper, this is like the prime, if not close to it, for a lot of key players. But they also have that experience. 18 of the 22 players won a gold 3 years ago. Like, this Canadian team has seen a lot of things. They've been through a lot of pressure moments at the Olympics. They saw the lows of a World Cup where you're not able to live up to the expectations of being a medal cont or a contender, and how tough it can be. So I think this Canadian team will probably handle this adversity quite well, just because they have that togetherness, they have that experience. But certainly, yeah, they'll have to get used to some added pressure, because you can just see it already online. Like, there is going to be a lot on them now.
How much different in your, obviously a year is a long time, but is this group from the team that failed to make it out of their group last summer at the FIFA World or at the FIFA World Cup compared to this group now? Like, they've been playing well. I think on your podcast you said they have only lost one game since the World Cup against Brazil, but just overall, how much better, different, similar, like, is this team compared to last year?
I think it's similar, but I think the key thing is they've refreshed in a couple of ways. A big thing they struggle with at the World Cup is that they just brought a lot of familiar players, but maybe not necessarily informed players. And you could have got away with a few, but then it was just at a point, especially in the attack, there was just no one was informed, because it was like Adriana Leon just wasn't getting minutes at club level. Nichelle Prince coming off an injury, Deanne Rose coming off an injury, so they couldn't get full minutes. Then that left you with, okay, you wanted to keep playing them. They were clearly struggling. Chloe Lacasse was her first tournament. She didn't get many minutes. Evelyne Vian was informed. She always is at club level, but then she can never seem to get those minutes at international. And that felt like a tournament of why the heck not? Because the rest of the forwards were not informed. That was a huge thing. And then the other one was just calling in veterans for the sake of calling in veterans, because there's definitely a lot of value to bringing veterans to a tournament like this. But it's always important that, again, you pick a team that for the most part you've got players that are informed, that are used to that. And it felt like Canada just kind of went for a very similar group to the Olympics, when there were players knocking on the door that were ready for bigger roles. And I think what's key is this tournament is you look, you got now at the back, young Jade Rose. She's ready to step up. To be fair, she was going to be in that World Cup squad, and she was one of the many can injuries Canada dealt with. Fair enough. Simia Wujo wins a spot in this squad and should play key minutes. That's huge. I just look across the board. I see this team right now. There's way less question marks of form, of fitness. There's just, a couple, and for the most part, they've been resolved. So for now, I think this Canadian team looks a lot more set up to win than they were last year, where it was kind of like relying on everything to go right. Where I think now they've got a lower, or they've got a higher floor, sorry, just because they've made a lot more prudent roster decisions.
You said something interesting on your podcast, like this team's more set up to win at the Olympics, and obviously that's a much smaller field. But maybe why do you think that is the case for this team, that maybe they can still, maybe I don't know if they'll get a gold medal, but push for a medal in this tournament.
Yeah, for sure. I think the big thing that stands out is the format, because with the 12 teams, it means that, of course, for you to do a quarterfinal, you need to include third place winners. Now he's fine with tournaments with third place winners. We saw it recently at the Men's Euros this past summer. Like it rewards teams in the group stage. Essentially, if you get a win, you have a very strong chance of going through. If you get a win and a draw, it's almost a guarantee. Like the only exception is that like freakish group that was like the four-way tie, right, with Belgium and Ukraine and Slovakia and everyone. Like that's the only time where you get 4 points and you miss out. It's very rare not to. So for Canada, that benefits them at the Olympics, because they're a team, they don't lose very often when they're at their best. Like they're defensively sound, they know how to lock things down. And you kind of saw that in at the World Cup. Like in the first two games, they only allowed one goal. The problem is they only scored two, and they both came in the second half against Ireland. That nil-nil draw against Nigeria was a terrible result at the World Cup, because you need to win that game. At the Olympics, if they draw a game like that, so what? As long as you go out and win another one. If you get 4 points, I'd be pretty confident in your chances. And then from there, this Canadian team's always built for the knockout stages. Because, yeah, you look at it this year, they've played the US twice. They've gone to penalties twice. But hey, taking them to penalties, you're not losing the game. You're giving yourself a shot. And you kind of saw that in Tokyo, where Canada, they just got out their group, two ties, one win. It was nothing to write home about, right? Like their win was over Chile, two draws against Japan, and then, of course, Great Britain. You go to the knockouts, you tie Brazil, wasn't a pretty game, but hey, you're not losing the game. You go to the US, it's a grind of a game, you get a win, and then you go to the final, it's another tie technically, because you go to penalties. That's not the prettiest path. It's not anything to write home about, but in tournament football, it's survival. And I think this Canadian team's built a lot more to survive than they are to beat teams outright. And that's their biggest challenge of, oh, can they get those wins outright, especially against teams like New Zealand and Colombia, which are the games they'll need to win if they want to get out the group.
Maybe just on that, obviously you alluded to the New Zealand and Colombia, and obviously they're with the host France. Just maybe talk about that group and what kind of the challenges that this group presents, and maybe also the positive that this group has, because it seems like it's not as good as maybe some of the other groups for Canada.
Yeah, I think Canada got a pretty solid group on paper. I mean, it's always tough to get the hosts, especially this version of France. They've done their work to be at their best and to finally be good at a major tournament. But at the same time, I think if you're Canada, you didn't want Spain. So the fact that they avoided Spain is not a bad thing, in the sense that that's going to be the toughest match. Then you look in terms of course, Canada being in Pot B. Then you look at Colombia. Colombia is a tough one, because I think they're going to be super tough, and they're going to be underrated. They've got two of the best players in the tournament, and they're a growing team. They're a physical team. Canada sometimes struggle with those sorts of games. But at the same time, I think that's something where Canada's done a lot of homework, a lot of prep of playing teams like a Mexico twice, where those are a bit more physical CONCACAF type games. Because you're going to get that with Colombia, who at the Gold Cup really surprised teams with, like, oh yeah, like they're skilled, but they also don't mind making a heavy tackle, defending tough. So that's something for challenge for Canada, because they've struggled with that in the past. And then New Zealand, it's just the sense of, they'll be a true underdog. Now they'll have this chip on the shoulder after the whole incident. Like they'll be tough. They're gonna give Canada a tough game under their new manager. So I'm expecting a tough game. I think the big thing that stood out is that Canada doesn't actually match up all that well stylistically against these three teams. So it'll be interesting to see what they can bring. But yeah, I think in terms of the actual group, they did avoid some of the tougher teams. And they're pretty lucky with the draw in the sense that as long as they don't finish third in the group, they can get a favorable quarterfinal matchup, in my opinion. So for Canada, again, these matchups aren't going to be easy, but they can look at their group and feel pretty satisfied with what they got.
And you think that the semifinals is maybe the expectation for this group? And is that why is that the case? And maybe not a gold, or maybe even, should we even have that high of an expectation of a team that didn't make it out of their group at the World Cup?
Oh, that's exactly it, right? It's the reality is that for now, the gold medal is more of a statistically, at least, it's a more of an anomaly than it's been. Like, it's Canada's only final they've made. They've consistently made semifinals, so they've proven they can get to semifinals. That Olympics was the first time they made that hump, got over that hump, and got to the final. So I think semifinals is a reasonable expectation, just because on paper, I see Canada's path there as like. If I were to predict my most likely outcome, I think Canada, like it's fair to say they finish second in their group. Again, they can finish first, no doubt. I think they can beat France, but I think statistically, I'd predict a second place finish. They'd likely play like a Germany or an out of form US. That's not an unreasonable game to win, right? Like they took the US to penalties twice, maybe third time's the charm. I think semifinals is a fair bar. So yeah, I think for them the of course they have to get to the semifinals, because anything but that will feel like a bit of a disappointment for this team. But then from there in the semifinals it'll be up to them to prove that what happened in 2021 wasn't as much of an anomaly, that they have taken that step forward, that they can start to win those sorts of games. So I feel like they're kind of in a moment where they have to prove they can be more than a team that just reaches the semifinals and then maybe ends up going for bronze like they did in the two other Olympics before it.
Is there a player on this team that you think might break out on the national stage at the Olympics, at this tournament?
Yeah, there's definitely quite a few. I mean, probably the big one I'd look at the back is a Jade Rose, just the young Canadian center back. She's definitely been one to watch. Just plays way beyond her years and has fit in perfectly with that trio of Kadisha Buchanan, Vanessa Gilles. So keep an eye on her. Otherwise, a few other names that have been thrown out there that are worth keeping an eye on is Simiu Wujo, who's another one of the young players on this team. And really looks set to take a big role and kind of be a bit of a surprise pick. If not, a few others to just to throw out some to watch. Chloe Lacasse, because as our co-host Brendan reminds us every time, is he's a Benfica fan, so he's always going to have that soft spot. It's her first Olympics, and at 31, who knows? Like you said, who knows what 4 years is going to look like? Maybe this is her last. Certainly, she'll probably play like it, just because nothing's guaranteed in this sport. That could be a bit of an interesting edge if someone who's in good form. She made a huge move last year to Arsenal. Can Lacasse have a big tournament? I would expect it. And just another one, I always keep an eye on in Evelyne Vian. It just feels like if she gets the right opportunity, if she gets the right minutes, she's just always on the cusp of a breakout. You don't score as much as you do for your club and not. So it's just for Canada. Bev Priestman, can they ever find a way to get the most out of Evelyne Vian, a Canada shirt?
Well, hopefully they come back with, a medal, and that you'll have some, sleepless but fun sleepless nights, with the time difference in Vancouver. But I want to cross over a little bit to now the men's team. And I feel like probably Uruguay and Argentina had drones somewhere in the States for those games for the Copa America. But just you're like at the end of the day, when you sit back, you look at how well this team did. What are maybe your main takeaways about the tournament, and maybe what it means for the future of this program that they came forth at the Copa America, pushed Argentina a couple times, obviously probably should have beat Uruguay, and made it to the semifinals, while obviously the USA and Mexico didn't do so hot at the same time.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty pleased, because I feel like the big theme I've had is back on track. I feel like Canada's back to where the trajectory they were on kind of before 23, where just felt like everything would go wrong for them on or off the field. It was just not a great year for the men's program. as a whole, or even I guess just the whole program between the Women's World Cup, the all everything off the field, feels like now for this men's team, it was a bit of just get back on track, get show that this team is on the cusp of doing some big things. And that, yeah, like this is a team that's going to realistically be able to compete with top sides, hopefully even soon beat top sides. They show that they can beat some savvy sides, like they can go up against Chile, Peru, Venezuela, which I think are teams that, a year, 2 years, 3 years ago, they might have struggled. They handled those tests quite well. Now for them, that next step is, okay, can you start to beat the Argentinas, the Uruguays, which aren't easy teams to beat, but I feel a lot more confident now that they're on the right track. So the them getting back on track is one of the key takeaways. Another one is the mentality, because this team's got talent. I think that was a big thing that stood out watching them, especially in 2023. And you're kind of like, oh, what's wrong? Maybe they've kind of hit their peak. I was like, no, this team's talented. You look at Jonathan David, Alphonso Davies. They didn't get any worse. Like, they're doing their thing at club level. They're still young. Ismaël Koné, still young. This team's core of players are still guys in their mid to early 20s. And then there's a few like Stefano Stacchio, might be 27, but for the most part, this is a young, growing team. And I think what's key is that Jesse Marsh came in, pushed that core, but he gave him a bit of that mentality. It's kind of been funny because he said, Jesse Marsh, he's like, look, our team's too Canadian. We're too nice. That's one thing I said to you guys. Like, you're good players, but if you're going to beat teams like Argentina or Uruguay, you see it. Argentina, Rodrigo De Paul, he was willing to do anything to win, much to the annoyance of Canadians,
Yes.
because it involved diving, it involved, just rolling around on the floor, it involved just, jawing at people. But you could tell the guy wants to win, and he's an elite player. He's one of the best at his position. That's what he's willing to do. Well, Jesse Marsh is saying, look at Argentina. They won a World Cup, they won two Copa Americas, because they're willing to do whatever it takes to win. Do you have that in you? And I think we're starting to see more of it, of Canada, of, okay, that mentality, that swagger of, okay, let's not be too nice. Let's go out and do our thing and try to win games. If teams want to be physical with us, we don't mind. If teams want to play a skill game, we don't mind. And I think we really saw that from Canada. So I think they really progressed in those few areas. So now, yeah, I genuinely see a scenario where it feels like they can go back on an upward trajectory, which is so exciting with the World Cup looming.
I feel like the thing that I take out of the World Cup is just Jesse Marsh, and just it feels like they have a new Herdman, just with the charisma and the energy and just all those po the post game or the, all those press conferences where it feels like he has an amazing quote every time. How much credit do you think he deserves for just how well this team did at this tournament?
Deserves huge credit. Absolutely. I think he deserves credit for just, again, the mentality, because he's been the one coming in and pushing. It's been fascinating because he's a very personable guy. You can see it, like the way he works with young players, the way he interacts with his guys. You've seen it in his stints in the past. Like, guys love playing for him. But I think what's been interesting to see is that he also finds a line to bring some intensity, to challenge guys, to push them. And that's a tough line to find as a coach. So I've been impressed to see that he hasn't minded putting an arm around a shoulder of a guy to increase their confidence, but also being like, guys, let's bring the intensity. Let's act like a top national team. So I really love that, like, contrast in styles. And you can kind of hear it in his press conferences where, he's had times where he's been like, yeah, I'm so proud of this group. This group's so great. And then other times where he's like, look, I'll be honest, like, I wasn't happy. We weren't at our standard. The guys know that. And I think that sort of good cop, bad cop has been strong, nice to see from Marsh. And then, of course, I think tactically there was a fit on paper of, okay, he wants to play an athletic, direct game. Canada's got some guys who can fit into that. And we've seen it. I think the big surprise, though, has been defensively. Jesse Marsh has these guys humming along like a solid defensive team. And he still hasn't quite found the right attack yet. Uruguay, finally, they showed some glimpses and potentially saw some solutions, but he still hasn't figured out that attack yet. But I think based on what we've seen from Jesse Marsh, I don't be surprised if he figures that out, but before too long.
How much maybe is the next step is maybe to get Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies humming at the for Canada, and not that they had four tournaments, but you don't really look back at this tournament and say, oh, that was the Alphonso Davies show or the Jonathan David show. Like, how do you think, what's the process for Marsh to maybe get those guys more involved and playing at maybe a bit higher level for this national team?
For sure. It's about just figuring out the best situation, the best environment for those two. For Jonathan David, it'll just be all right. Feels like you gotta kind of orchestrate the attack a bit more for him. I just stylistically, him and Kyle Larin continue to struggle together. Might it be better to set it up so that Canada has a bit more of a setup that suits David? I think he found that against Uruguay when he brought David off the bench and he was on his own up front. He thrived. He gets a great key goal that nearly won Canada that game. I think I want to see more of that from Jonathan David. Set him up in an environment where you just ask him to be the striker, get him service. Because I think he was asked to do a lot off the ball, which he's good at. But for Canada, if you want to use his elite goal scoring talent, well, you got to set him up to play like an elite goal scorer. As for Alphonso Davies, I think the next step will just be, the support around him, because I thought Alphonso Davies had a very good defensive tournament until the last game, where okay, maybe he could have done a bit better on that last Uruguay goal. Other than that, I thought he was very good all tournament defensively. But again, like you mentioned, with Davies, it's defense, but it's offense. He's a guy who can give you a handful of goals a year for Bayern. He can get you a lot of assists. I think for Canada, the next step is freeing him a bit more, having it so that maybe they have more of a defensive midfielder that can cover while Davies pushes up in the attack. Because there was moments where he did it and you could see, okay, Canada's attack is better off for it. How can you do it more often? Or will it be something where genuinely, with Sam Adekugbe finally returning from an injury, do you go back to Adekugbe playing left back, Davies left mid? Maybe that's also another solution Marsh looks at.
I was going to ask, what do you think the best, and I feel this has been talked about so many times, but what is the best position for Davies in your mind on this team?
I feel like it's still left back. I think it's just left back with the right responsibilities, because I think it has been nice to have him back there this tournament. And I think if we're going to talk about how good Canada's defense has been, he's done his job. He's done his job in that regard of him, Cornelius Bombito, Johnston grew into a formidable unit that did their job throughout this tournament. So I like that. It was nice to have, but also, of course, you want more out of him offensively. So I think the key now will be finding a balance of how can you set Davies up so that he can use his talent offensively while still bringing that calmness, that leadership at the back. So I'd say it's left back, but maybe in a bit more of an adjusted role, because left mid, it's nice in the right circumstances. You saw it recently for Bayern. If he can keep his game simple and just cut inside, score, no problem at all. But I think for Canada, just there's still a team that's growing defensively. They're a young team defensively. I think having a Davies back there really gave a Cornelius and Bombito the sort of security they needed to be confident, to be aggressive. And the same goes for Johnston. So I don't really want to break up that pair too much defensively.
There was a bunch of stars that kind of broke out at this Copa America, and I'll start with the one just with a bicycle kick, because I think that's just such a beautiful goal that I can't go unnoticed. And he was unbelievable in that game against Uruguay. Just in terms of Ismail Kone, it looks like he's going to Marseille. Just what do you think his maybe ceiling is, and how much of a game changer is he for this program to have that maybe dynamic midfielder as a part of this group?
Yeah, it definitely feels like his ceiling is quite high. Like, I think we see, if we're considering Jonathan David, Alphonso Davies, those are guys who are at their best among the best at their positions. I see a similar ceiling for Ismail Kone because, again, he's a couple years younger, or at least, yeah, he's turned 22 this year, so he's like 2 years younger than them. He's just been the one where it's been a bit more of a late bloomer in the sense that it's just happened so quick of like get discovered at 19, play a year in MLS, go to Europe, play a year, year and a half at Watford, all of a sudden you're at Marseille. But that there's a reason why he's been on such a rise because he's that talented. I think for him, he can absolutely be the heartbeat of this team in midfield. And what excites me so much about Kone's play is that he can do so much for this team in midfield. His skills are on the ball. He can progress the ball. He dribbles. He can pass it all at a high level. He can read the game in terms of the way he advances. He reads space. Great. But now, what it's really exciting me is that now he's showing, oh, yeah, I can do things defensively too. That he is a bit still raw defensively. And that as he grows that side of his game, that's where he's really going to be able to take that step up and become a top world-class player. So now I'm super excited because the good news is Ligue 1 for a young 22-year-old like him, there's not many better environments in the world to go out and become that world-class player. So many top young midfielders have come through Ligue 1 because there they the way the league's built, where it's a bit more physical, a bit more athletic, but also very technical. You learn how to defend in transition. You learn how to be able to go box to box, but it's not like an overly physical league where you stop using your skills or you stop using some of those things that he's good at. So I think Kone, we're going to see a lot of what he's good at while still growing. And in 2, 3 years, when he's 24, 25, I would not be surprised to see him make a 30, 40, $50 million move to a top club because he's got that kind of ceiling.
Well, I see the same in you. I think there's a 30, $40 million transfer and when you hit, 27, 28. So I see that with you, Alex, too. But talking about another guy who might be up for a move and Mosbat Biddo, he played so well for Canada during the tournament. So it was a part of many memes as well at the same time. Just how exciting is it to have maybe a defensive prospect? And there's others as well. But just to have a guy that seems to be, maybe the face of the back line for heading into the next World Cup and maybe even for years to come in Bombido. And what do you think you saw maybe that elevation in game? Like, where did he improve at the Copa America?
Yeah, it's a great question because yeah, over how long has Canada been like, man, we got a Davies and a David in the attack, but can we get a Davies in the defense or a Kone in the defense and Bombido? Okay, he's maybe not quite at that level yet, but it definitely feels like he's got immense potential. And it's both exciting and it's also frustrating depending on your perspective. It's exciting to see his rise, but as Jesse Marsh has noted, the bigger question is, how the heck did you only find this guy now? 23, 24. Where was this guy when he was 19, 20? Of course, as we know, it's been a heck of a journey to get here. Junior college, transfer NCAA, get drafted to Colorado, get injured your first year. Like, it's been an incredible rise. But yeah, for Bombito, what really impressed me this tournament is that no doubt he has all the tools to be a top center back, like physically, like he's tall. No doubt he's fast, like he's the fastest player in MLS this year, which like I Alex, this isn't supposed to happen to like 6'3" center backs. Like usually it's supposed to be like wingers, or that's 5'9" wingers. There's also the fact he's really good on the ball because he's kind of gotten that footballing education in Quebec and throughout his time in college where he's very good on the ball. And what impressed me the Copa America is, okay, we knew he had all these things, but you kind of wonder, might he struggle to adapt to the pace? Might he struggle a bit mentally with just the level? And it's tough. You make half a mistake, it usually ends up in your net. His mentality is incredible. That's what surprised me this tournament, is that anytime he looked a bit shaky, he looked like the young, inexperienced center back that in reality he is, because he still hasn't gotten those reps to that he needs. But then he just bounced back like a 300 game veteran, like a 28-year-old who'd been at the position for years. And that really stands out because I think if he's going to get to the next level, his tools are already there, but it's going to be mentality. That's why center backs peak a little later of, okay, it's at center backs, it's not about being the fastest. It's not about being the strongest. It's about being the smartest. Exactly. It's all about cerebral. And I think he showed that, oh yeah, he is a very cerebral thinker. He has that mentality. So I'm excited. Hopefully he can make a move to the next level because I have absolute confidence that he has what it takes to thrive and to grow and to learn. And while it's a bit annoying we've only discovered him at 24, I think with how center backs are, there's no reason why he can't be dominant for the next decade if he gets that right education, if he takes those next steps. So it's definitely a player to watch as potentially someone with top class potential at center back for Canada, which is a nice change.
How much does that maybe change the outlook for this team just to have, and Cornelius is not too old either, and just that pairing and having maybe much more of a solidified defense going forward, because that really has been the Achilles heel for this team for even when they were making it through World Cup qualifying.
Oh, it makes a huge difference, right? Just of having that pillar at the back. Like, yeah, it's something where for Canada at the World Cup qualifiers, defense was a bit of a worry. And I think Canada had to kind of compensate their play where they couldn't do certain things where John Herdman wanted to play a high line that like Jesse Marsh had. He wanted to be more aggressive defensively. He couldn't. He tried it. Canada would just get rinsed. They didn't have the speed. They didn't have what it took to cope with that. Now with Bombito comes in, like they can, it changes the way they play. Yeah, they can go against Argentina as wild as it is and play a high line because they know Bombito and Cornelius can handle the demands of it. So I think Bombito changes the equation in a massive way because it just in international soccer, the hardest thing to do is to find balance because the reality is you don't control your player pool. You can't decide for to develop a world-class right back. You can't decide to develop a world-class left wing. Like even teams at the top level, like Argentina, for all the strengths they have, they've consistently struggled to find top class fullbacks. They have pretty darn good ones, but I'm sure they're sitting there dreaming, can we have a top class fullback like an Alphonso Davies? And Canada's like, look, we have a top class fullback. We'd love to have like a center
Messi would
back,
be
a
nice.
midfielder. Yeah, exactly. Messi,
No,
although Maritime Messi
well, that's the
isn't bad
best transition
either.
because I wanted to go to him, and obviously Jacob Schaffelberg had an amazing tournament, and he was just so much fun to watch, just him running down the touchline. It sounds like he's staying in Nashville, I think, but I mean you're much more plugged in. But just how exciting is it just having that type of player in the player pool, and how much does Toronto FC rue the day that they let him go for essentially nothing? But just maybe th your thoughts on his Copa America.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, yeah, you hope Toronto FC misses him because he's just been, it's been fascinating to see his rise and growth over the past 2 years. But yeah, what I think what Schaffelberg did is he was extremely, of course, I think he was likable this term. I say extreme in two senses. It's play, it's direct, it's no nonsense, it's get the ball, it's run at guys, it's cross the ball, it's shoot the ball. There's a bit of beautiful simplicity to it, whereas Canada out wide sometimes is tournament they struggle, the play would slow down, and Schaffelberg did the opposite of that. But then it's also just the person. You can see like he's easygoing, he plays with the smile, like he's obviously got great hair that flies through the wind, which Canadians always, Canada's always gonna love a good mullet. You've seen it
Yep.
back to the 70s with
Gretzky.
guys like Guy Lafleur, Gretzky. Like, you just love a good mullet. He just ticks all the boxes, the kind of player you want to root for, and especially that he is just such a nice guy. Like, he has a huge game. I forget which team it was. It was either Chile or Venezuela. And after the game, he's giving a shout out to the Halifax Tides, being like, hopefully my daughter plays for them in a while. And you just see his personality, like he's a super down earth, Nova Scotia guy, as people from there tend to be. Like he obviously was easy to root for off the field as well. So now I'm excited to see what his next steps are because he has a very interesting physical profile where he's incredibly quick. But he's grown a lot technically. His crossing's gotten a lot better. His shooting's very good. For me, I want to see if will he be able to make that next step. And I definitely feels like he could be primed to move from Nashville. It's hard to know if he'll be this summer. I mean, teams been interested. Club America in Mexico, of course, called. But I think for Schaffelberg, it'll be hopefully he can get a bit of a European look because I think he's someone that could really thrive in that. But if he ends up staying in MLS, that's not a bad thing either because he's confident, he's in form, and as we know for players, sometimes that's the most important thing versus where you actually play and what club you represent.
Is there, you are covering the U20 team as they're on their quest to make it to the U20 World Cup, but is there any players maybe on the horizon? I know Jesse Marsh has talked about dual national, so I think this is my obligatory question about is there any dual nationals or players that you think Canada can maybe bring into the mix, or even young players that you think might maybe be, impactful in 2026.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of intriguing guys to look at. I'll try to hit off on a few of them. Just might forget a few because there's quite a
That's okay.
lot. But for example, I think the obvious name starts at like a Daniel Jebison. I think it's exciting to see that he made a big move to go to Bournemouth lately. He obviously struggled last year with some blood clotting issues, which is tough for a young guy. But it sounds like he's back and fully fit. Hopefully he can either, I don't think he'll end up going to Bournemouth the first year. I think they'll probably send him on a loan. Hopefully he can thrive on loan and Canada can convince him to come in because you can never have too many exciting, promising strikers. So that's obviously one to look at. Otherwise, some other names. The one going back to MLS, a young guy that I've been excited to see the development of is a Nathan Saliba at Montreal, just because Canada needs more midfielders. Saliba's been getting a lot of reps. It's come with some growing pains. It's also come with some exciting moments because he can whiz the ball around the field. His passing is super strong. He just needs to grow a lot defensively, but he's so young. So I hope Saliba can continue to develop and be the latest Montreal player to make that jump up to Canada. Otherwise, a few names, like you've seen it with the U20s, there's some exciting prospects there. The big one is Santiago Lopez, Canadian-Mexican dual national. He's just an exciting, he can play on the wing, he can play striker, he can kind of play as a 10. He's just got this incredible mentality for his age. You've seen it in this tournament. Yeah, they've played two games. He already has a goal and two assists, and he's just been a presence for Canada with his play. Maybe he ends up getting a bit of a look long term. So those are definitely a few of the big ones. And then yeah, and then we'll have to see long term. 'Cause I think the fun thing is with dual nationals is that sometimes they just kind of pop up out of nowhere. Like you just all it takes is some kid will ball out for 2 months in Europe. And oh, it turns out, did you know he was Canadian? He lived for Canada in 3 years when he was younger. And that's where you kind of you'll see something like that for dual nationals. So yeah, I'd probably say like those are a couple that stand out off the top of my head. Another one, Jackson, now that I remember that bit older, but again, someone to keep an eye on based on the trajectories on. It's Promise David, the 23-year-old, I think he still is, recently moved to Union Saint-Gilloise. Bit of a late bloomer, but USG, if anyone have been following them in Belgium recently, they're an incredible, incredible development side. They know how to push players forward. I think a guy like Promise David can really take a next step in his development there. We've already seen he's getting minutes playing in big games. They already won the Super Cup this past weekend. So Promise David is another one to throw my name into. But yeah, there's a lot. Like Luka Koleosha, for example. Might he ever commit to Canada? We'll be keeping an eye on that situation, guys. Even like a Nico Seeger, who unfortunately, it looks like he's leaning towards Croatia. Who knows? Maybe Jesse Marsh can come in and give him that call up, give him that sway. Because Canada now, I think people are going to realize there's a lot of value of playing for a team that just went to the semifinals of a Copa America that's about to host a World Cup, and maybe some dual nationals that were hesitant before because of all the chaos might be a bit more convinced now.
What do you think the world, like how much impact, and obviously I'm sure you're going to say a lot, but just what's the type of impact that this Copa America run kind of has on how the rest of the world sees Canada as a soccer nation, especially heading into the World Cup in 2026? And you know, we played the Dutch and the French ahead of this Copa America, but like do you see like other teams kind of in other countries taking note of Canada now in terms of on the international stage?
Yeah, 100%. I think for Canada, this shows that they can play, that they have got a unique mix of skill. Like this isn't a team that's, without talented players, but also they've got the mentality, the grit. That's also, I think, what really surprised people is that, oh, these Canadians, like, it's just the reputation of, oh, these Canadians, they're nice, et cetera. Like, oh, okay, maybe they know also how to play a bit physical, et cetera. So I think for Canada, this was really key to putting them on the map, especially playing Argentina twice. Like Argentina is one of those teams right now, whether you love them or you hate them, because I know there's both extremes. Certainly, I think most people can appreciate the level of talent that they have on the board, although they are unlikable for obvious reasons, and especially amid the racist scandal that's been kind of rocking that team and that country. But a lot of eyeballs were on Argentina throughout the tournament. Canada got to play them twice. People really got like the impression of, oh, these Canadians, they can surprise. And I think that's huge because people in this, they know that Canada's about to co-host a World Cup. They remember Canada going to the World Cup in 22 and kind of struggling. So them to see this rise, they're going to take note of Canada. So yeah, absolutely. I think this Canadian team is not going to be as much of a hidden, forgotten team anymore. And I think that's huge for Canada because that helps them book better friendlies when the opportunity's there. It helps them with dual nationals. It helps just like even for transfers, right? Like it's no coincidence. You have a good Copa America and all of a sudden guys happen to know who Moise Bombido is, happen to know who Derek Cornelius, Jacob Schaffelberg, all these guys. We know them and we're saying, sign these guys, we know they're good, but now people are going to see like, oh, these Canadians, they're all right, like they're cheap because no one knows who they are. That's not like when Brazilians, everyone knows how good Brazilians are. So if you're the next young Brazilian prospect, you're going to cost 50 million. Well, I mean, the next big Canadian prospect might cost you 5, 10, 15 mil. That's what, right? Yusmail Kona ended up costing just like 10 mil, which is a steal for Marseille. people are also taking note on that regard. So this is huge for Canada. It's absolutely massive because it kind of puts them in that fun position where they can really now just take advantage of that growth, take advantage of that attention, and try to take that next step as a program.
What do you think, when you talk about that next step, there's a World Cup in 2 years. What are the expectations for this team, do you think? I know it's, we're a couple of years away, but what should and do you expect the expectations to be for this team at hosting a home World Cup?
I think at a base level, it'll be to win a game finally. Just get over that hump. Honestly, get out your group. Canada will have the advantage of not having a pot one team in with them. So that will, they won't have like an Argentina, France, et cetera, with them in the group stages because of the draw. And there'll be third place teams. Like Canada should get out the group. I think that's the base expectation. Win a game, get out the group. I think now, based on what we've seen and based on we'll have to see how the next 2 years go, Canada all of a sudden I could see quarterfinal potential. It's not unreasonable to hit, but if they're gonna have that, like if I'm gonna be able to say that confidently at the next World Cup, they've still got a lot of work to do now. And I think the big thing that stands out to me is go win a trophy in CONCACAF. Because that's something where this team, I think this team needs that. Because again, for this Canadian team, it feels like they're in a zone where now it's not about competing with the best. They know they can compete with the best. It's not like, oh, we want to go out against Argentina and not get embarrassed. No, they know they can go out there and not get embarrassed. They want to go and beat Argentina. For within CONCACAF, it's not, oh, we just want to be in the mix with the big boys. No, they can be as good as the US and Mexico, if not better, based on the day. Well, then go out and prove it and go win a trophy in CONCACAF. Then, go out in friendlies and try to prove you can actually beat teams like France and Argentina instead of coming close. And I think based on how that journey goes over the next 2 years, if all goes well, Canada can absolutely be a team that makes the quarterfinals. So hopefully they can continue on that trajectory because I think that would be incredible for this team to make a run like that at a home World Cup. Because plus, if they do it right, all the games could be at home. It could really capture a nation. So yeah, we'll just have to see how the next 2 years go before we can confidently say quarterfinals.
Do you find like someone that you've been in the soccer game in this country for a couple of years now as a media member, and you've kind of seen the rise of the CPL? We have the Northern Super League coming up next year as well. Do you feel like we're becoming a bit of a soccer nation here in Canada?
I'd say baby steps, right? I think we love soccer in this country, but I think Soccer Nation, it's going to require just more buy-in across the board of like, okay, well, if we're a soccer nation, how, A, from the side of how are we going to develop all the next players? How are we going to give them opportunities? How are we going to ensure that Canada's talent pool is healthy? Then on the other side, as fans, if we want to be a soccer nation, well, as fun as it is to put on the Maple Leaf up there and go cheer on your women's national team in the Olympics at a World Cup, your men's national team at a World Cup, a Copa America to cheer them on in the big moments. Ultimately, the health of the sport in this country, as it is across the world, it relies on your domestic leagues. It relies on going out and supporting your CPL teams so that they can develop the next players for the men's national team. It's about supporting your NSL teams, your Northern Super League teams, so that you can get the next Julia Grosso, the next Jessie Flemings, who won't have to go to college anymore, who won't have to go to Europe just to get an opportunity. They can do so in their backyard. And of course, it involves just supporting all levels, be it if a League One, for example, at the semi-pro level, or on the other side of it, your Canadian MLS teams, because they still play a pretty key role in developing talent. Even if we can argue or look at are they doing it in the most efficient way, they're still producing key players like Alphonso Davies, guys like Moise Bombido are cutting their teeth in MLS. Ismail Koné went through CF Montreal, et cetera. So yeah, I think it just all support it all starts with support between when the national team's playing, because that's ultimately like it is around the world, right? That's where the teams like Germany, like people support their leagues. They've obviously got fan ownership, 50 plus one in those leagues. They support pushing young talents through those leagues. Well, for Canada, it's okay. How can we take that next step? So that's the big hope. I just hope that people realize they love soccer in this country. God, you ask most people, they know World Cup Euros. They know the top European teams. Well, okay, how do you get those people to show up to the soccer we have in our backyard? Because yeah, I don't know how. Maybe I, of course, I'm a bit biased because I go to a lot of the local soccer in our backyard. It's pretty good. Yeah, okay, it's not that European standard yet, but it's pretty good. It's growing, and you can catch some of those next talents before they're discovered.
Well, Alex, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I always appreciate you coming on the show. I think this is the third or fourth time that you've been on, so I appreciate it. But you have a great podcast. You have a great thing going with Northern Football. Obviously, you're at One Soccer as well. Just maybe, the floor is yours. You can plug. You have a studio-ish now. Just talk about kind of what's up for you during the Olympics and other stuff you have going as on as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just first off, thanks to you, Alex, for having me on. Always good to have a good double Alex
I know.
show. It's nice,
It's
right?
rare. It's rare out here. It's just us two.
Strengthen Alex numbers, right? We're always gonna have that. But yeah, no, in terms of now, exciting, just continuing to put as much time and thought into this Olympic tournament. Hopefully Canada can make a deep run. Because people, again, they love their soccer. They loved following along for the men's run. Well, hopefully the women can go on a run and we can just keep that energy going. So it was great during Copa America. And I saw it last Olympics. People want to get behind a successful Canadian soccer team. So hopefully they could put this early scandal behind them and just get going, get results. I'll be doing my best to cover it. In terms of just writing, analysis, we're going to do, a lot of videos in terms of on One Soccer. I know we're going to potentially do some like live
Cool.
Q&As, some
Awesome.
watch alongs, all that stuff. And of course, Northern Football, we're going to be doing our best to give wall-to-wall coverage as much as the schedule allows us. That's the one thing that's tough with the Olympics versus Copa. Copa thankfully gave us 3 4 days between games. The Olympics, it's literally every 2 days. They're going to play the first three games in less than a week. So we're going to do our best. It might be a bit chaotic, might be half an hour episodes instead of an hour, just trying to get time to put it all together. But we'll be doing our best to cover all of that on both platforms. So definitely looking forward to it. And hopefully Canada can make a deep run.
Well, you're one of the best out there, and I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on this little podcast, and I wish you the best, and I hope for your sake Canada, gets brings back the gold, and you can, have a lot of fun, and you'll be busy, but you cover the game like no one else, and I really appreciate you taking the time, Alex.
Oh no, it's my pleasure, Alex. You're far too kind. And hey, likewise goes to you for the basketball. I love watching basketball, so I'll be hoping they can go deep and we can have a great summer of just covering our Olympic teams being successful. Because I've been loving reading all the work you've done on the senior men's team, and of course, I know you'll be keeping an eye on that senior women's team. So pretty good at basketball too. It'd be nice to see Canada become the basketball powerhouse we can be.
Bring back two golds or three golds, who knows? I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I do think it'll be a really fun summer for Canadian fans who love soccer and basketball in this country. And no, it'll be fun. I'd like to see a picture of like Shea with, Christine Sinclair in the background or something. That'd be pretty cool. So, thanks so much, Alex, for taking the time, and I'll be covering all your stuff.